It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. This is episode 85, wherein we visit with a friend of mine. This is kind of an interesting episode, actually, for The Cultural Hall. We visit with a woman by the name of Susan Messing. Does that name sound familiar to you?
No.
She is not a Mormon person. Kay. So that's peculiar in and of itself for The Cultural Hall.
For some people, yes.
Yeah, well, most of them.
For our listeners.
Yeah, for most of the people that we've interviewed, I can think of only a handful of people who aren't Mormon, and even less, I can't think of really but maybe one where the person wasn't Mormon ever.
Okay.
And she falls into that category. Never been Mormon, but she is, how would I describe her? She is famous in
how
the
so?
Improv circle.
Oh, okay, okay.
Like people who do, so Second City or Groundlings, all these groups, these improv things. She is a phenomenal actress.
Cool.
And growing up, really, really, really good friends with the Mormon family.
Okay, so that's sort of her perspective on it.
Yeah, so that's kind of the, I bring her into the Cultural Hall and we talk all about, you know, things that she has questions about. And it's just kind of a discussion with a non-member about the Mormon Church.
Those are always very interesting because, you know, we grew up in it and I like to hear
it's
outside looking in.
I hope that I do it justice because sometimes I feel like I am too agreeable.
Really?
You know what I'm saying?
Because I feel like you have a phenomenal skill of like putting the gospel into plain terms. Like when you interview Gina Barberi.
Right.
It was so good. Just like you just put it like every Joe could understand it.
Hopefully that is what happens here in the second and the third block. So we'll see. You'll have to tell me and let me know what you think.
I will.
It is edited a little bit as Susan has herself a little bit of a potty mouth.
Oh, no. I see. We'll just tone it up a little
that's
bit.
That's just edited for people because we like to, there's a few of those terrestrial swears that we like to keep out of this. But I did want to share this one other thing before we get into the second and third block here. This is an email from someone named Janica.
Okay.
Janica Miller. She writes, and I literally just received this, but I'm trying to be better about sharing the emails. So here we go. Says, I came across your podcast because of the interview that you did with Al Fox. That's the Tattooed Mormon.
Sure.
Great episode. Special episode. You can find that at theculturalhall.com or on iTunes or on Stitcher if you like to use the Stitcher app on your phone. I've been hooked ever since. Thanks for such a great, entertaining, and informative podcast, says Janica. If you haven't already, I think that you should interview Hank Smith. That guy is downright hilarious.
Who is he?
Keep up the good work. I don't know.
Oh.
I think I actually have Hank Smith's... Hold on, let me look at my phone. I think I've met Hank Smith at a thing at Deseret Book. And look at that.
Hank
I have his
Smith,
phone number in
801.
My phone. Yeah, so I will reach out to Hank Smith.
Who is he, though? What does he do?
So how I got this phone number, that's hilarious. How I got his phone number is I was going to buy religiously affiliated undergarments over at the Deseret Book.
Okay.
And there was a table of six people that were signing books.
Okay.
And one of them I recognized to be John, by the way.
Yeah, love him.
Is very funny.
Do we have him on?
I've got his phone number in here as well,
good.
But I haven't yet done that episode. But then a table full of people that I went, you know what, I should talk to these people. They're obviously significant enough that Mormon folk are lining up to get their autographs. So I did the go through the line and I said, here's what I do. This is what I kind of do on the side. I'd love to sit down and have this talk with you. Let's do it. And they said, all right, cool.
Cool.
And so I got a bunch of phone numbers and that's hilarious. So,
but we don't know what he does or why he was signing books.
He's an author.
Okay.
He signs books.
Okay.
He wouldn't sign a book he didn't write.
I know. I believe that. But what did he write his book about?
That is what we'll find out in a future episode. For the time being, let's get into the second and third block here of episode 85. We visit with Susan Messing in the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5576 to book your shoot today.
All right. I have to say that I'm really excited about this portion here of the Cultural Hall. I'm on the phone right now with Susan Messing. And to some of you, that name may sound very familiar. She's got a wiki page, you know.
I do?
Yeah. Did you not know that you did?
Yeah, but somebody wrote it. I don't know who wrote it, but I can tell occasionally, like, the few times I've checked it, somebody's written, like, she was a cheerleader in high school. And I'm like, oh, that's my sister Robin. Stop it. You know what I mean? Like, people add weird stuff.
Yeah, that, but
it's not like legal. It's not the world.
But that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it. Because this part is true. You're an American director, an actress, a comedian, author, and you're a teacher that lives in Chicago. All true.
Yes.
You're best known for your ensemble work at the Annoyance Theater and IO Theater, as well as being regarded as one of the forefront teachers of improvisational comedy.
Oh, my.
Look at that.
I don't know who wrote that one, but I'll take it. I'll take it.
But the reason why I love Susan is all of that. But a few years ago, when my life essentially completely changed around, Susan, you had a big part of it. And I don't know that you ever knew that that was the case.
Well, I know you came to Chicago to study improv. And which is great because Chicago is the mecca of this stuff. But you came with a very clear heart and a joy of the work. So actually, you probably inspired yourself more than I ever could have been the conduit of that for you, my love.
No, no.
That is the truth.
You're being modest. What happened?
No, I'm not. I'm really not. I mean, my job is to be enthusiastic and love what I do. If I don't, I should probably find something else to do. So I'm thrilled that you drank the Kool-Aid. But or as I guess you Mormons would do, you would take what, ginger ale and add a little
Kool-Aid
of
fine.
Sherbet. That's good, right? I'm doing well. But what's that punch called?
I had it until slush. Slush?
Or like celebration punch or something.
Oh yeah, yes.
Yeah. Something they would serve at weddings or something.
Yeah, you're getting a little old school on me there, Susan.
You know what? I'm more Mormon than you are, and I'm not. So, pretty cool. I can't wait to talk about that stuff. But anyway, you came to Chicago for the joy and celebration of this art, which always, as a teacher, reminds me how awesome this art is. So we feed into each other on this. It's very symbiotic.
And what I loved was that you challenged me while I was there. I guess I should give, for people who haven't listened to the episode of the Cultural Hall where I talk about that kind of phase in my life, me and the church, we didn't really agree in some really big aspects. At the point that I went to Chicago, I was kind of out of control and I was looking for just something different, a change of pace. And then I went out to Chicago and I took a class with you, and you did a couple of things that, you know, were just part of the class, but for me changed my life. One was that you encouraged me to be real and take a real look at who I was. And you weren't gentle about it.
I wasn't.
No.
Yeah, it seemed like my bedside manner, yeah.
And it completely changed who I was.
Oh,
It was a lot of work. I remember, you know, times just going and sitting by the side of the lake there in Chicago and just, you know, staring off and trying to, you know, figure out who I was and how I worked into this whole God's plan thing. And, you know, why was I lying to myself that I was one thing when I was really something else? But the things that you taught me in the class was just that, you know, I need to be real, and that's where, you know, that's where life happens, is from being real. So aside from all that, though, when I was out in Chicago visiting and learning, growing, changing, Susan was one of my teachers, and she made a kind of an offhand comment about being raised by some Mormons, or had some really close Mormon friends.
Well, actually, yeah, I grew up actually in Short Hills, New Jersey, and there was a stake in our town, sure. So I knew a lot of the Mormon kids, definitely.
And I feel like that's kind of where we had a little bit of a kindred connection, where maybe you understood a little bit, or there was just that similarity there. And so a couple of weeks ago, I asked Susan, "Hey, would you mind visiting with me? I do this podcast thing." And of course, as you can tell, she's agreed to do it. So I don't know if we just want to go question and answer, or if we want to just talk about things that you observed growing up. I don't know. I don't know where we go from here.
Well, you know, it's an interesting start off point. I think I certainly had a curiosity, and I've always had a curiosity about that. You know, I was raised Jewish, And one of the great loopholes in Judaism is you can question the existence of God and be a Jew. That's the only reason I think I keep myself on the roster. First of all, because if I dropped being on the roster, I feel like we've lost 6 million, and that would be 6 million and 1. That would suck. There's also loopholes in Judaism that you can kind of adapt it for a modern age. So, and for example, rabbi means wise man. It doesn't mean pipeline to God. So I can kind of be okay with that. I mean, I think, you know, they created Reform Judaism and Conservative Judaism and Orthodox Judaism for a reason, is that people identified culturally with being Jewish, but that it wasn't just because somebody did this in the shtetl 250 years ago doesn't mean it necessarily works for you. I think everybody's searching for their own path. And I always was fascinated with the Mormon culture because I always felt that they are some of our greatest patriots and, you know, proudest Americans and working in the FBI and CIA because they're so honest, blah-de-de-blink. Yet it's always been fascinating to me because just like the Catholics, you know, what is president? It's Hansen now, right?
President Hansen? Monson of the church.
Monson. Sorry for Hansons in this world. Maybe I'm thinking of the rock group. It's not even a rock group, right? Boy group?
No.
They have a lot of babies, too, though, Hanson. So maybe that's what I might
connect to.
Anyway, so Monson, President Monson, I'm wondering sometimes if he's considered a pipeline to God like the Pope is, or if he's kind of Reb Wiseman, and kind of just how religions change and grow with the times. Recently, last year, or was it last year or the year before, when they were dealing with Proposition 8,
there's a lot of things
about Mormonism that I love the fact that they're so prepared for God knows what, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that they can be incredibly kind and friendly in that. And then I see things that feel exclusive and strange things, like in all religions. I mean, you know, in some Jewish cultures, I'm not even considered Jewish because I'll touch a light switch on, you know, Sabbath. I mean, you know what I mean? They're purists and all this stuff. And I'm just wondering, you know, how this is adapting to a modern age, because you guys have, you know, apologists who are working, you know, to change history and this and that. But, you know, you're still finding in somebody's attic an old, you know, doctrine and covenant thing that, you know, has already switched through the years as that kind of gets rewritten. And sometimes I wonder, you know, how modern-day Mormons kind of deal with the fact, with their history, because some of the history is kind of violent, and how much of that they know or learn later on. You know what I mean? Because, like, I know that when you guys go off on missionaries, you're asking people to accept on faith, and is this true for you? Mm-hmm. And that's an emotional thing, and then later on you find out some of the facts, and I wonder how you deal with it. But I also believe that all religions are, you know, have a lot of violence in them, you know, my God is better than your God stuff. I'm wondering about that. I've got a lot of questions, actually.
Yeah,
I wrote them.
I wrote them down
because I'm very thoughtful.
Let's start there. I think that you honestly have hit it right on the head as far as one of the biggest struggles about the LDS Church now within its members is these trials of faith, is what, you know, what they call it within the faith. Obviously, is with the internet making so much of our history available, you have...
Right, but at the same time, being told not to read literature that's not faith-promoting...
Exactly.
Because that might be considered satanic, in a sense, when in fact, no, we're just revisiting facts, like the papyrus or whatever the case may be. And don't get me wrong, I think, like I said, there's so many aspects to the religion that are so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just that there's sometimes dichotomies there, and I can see where anybody on the inside would struggle, and does that make them, do they end up becoming a Jack Mormon if they can't handle it, or the LGBT, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff, sorry, going on. I was about to say something else.
Oh, I had no idea. I think that it's absolutely true, and the only thing that I can say is from my own personal experience, and I can't speak for anyone else, is I've had several friends who haven't made it through it. Have found something that, you know, from the history that they were taught one thing growing up and then found something that, you know, was in fact factual history that disagreed with what they were taught with, and then couldn't reconcile it and said, well, you know, there's this thing, but I was taught this thing. How do I know anything is true? And
it's no longer true for me. I mean, here's, you know, that kind of thing, because the thing, when you're indoctrinated into faith, and when you know when a 4-year-old is asked to give their testimony, you know, at a regular stake meeting, right? Mm. And they get it, they stand up and they say, "I know the church is true," and all that good stuff, which I think is great in a sense. That's probably how I assume that's how I was brought into Judaism, by going to Hebrew school like kids would go to primary,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But I also remember, you know, but my daughter has an ex-lapsed Catholic as a father, and I've told her that I believe that, you know, the basic tenets of the golden rule is what, you know, we do unto others as we would have done unto us.
Mm-hmm.
That's hopefully what all religions are founded on, not that I go waka waka woo and you go wooka wooka wee, because even then, I've met a lot of Mormons who have gone through the temple, you know, and are kind of like, what up? You know what I mean? Like, some people, you know, everybody's been told this is the most beautiful thing, and then they kind of go through and they go, is it? Just like I'm sure there are some people who go through a religious ceremony in Judaism and goes, what up with that?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing, I think, you know.
Because, you know.
You have those trials of faith, and then I think the temple is probably second in line of people going, that is not at all like I thought that would be.
Yeah, and it's changed. The ceremony has changed.
Yeah.
The blood oaths, that stuff now is happening. So it kind of, I see that it's changed for a modern time, but, you know, I don't know if this is a fact or a guess, but I heard underneath Salt Lake City there are these great archival, you know, things to keep history. And, you know, with like the Salamander Papers and a lot of the stuff that went down that was, you know, uncool, but they bought up stuff that would make the church look bad, you know, and to kind of keep it hidden, well, you know, somebody's got in their attic something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, or somebody can say, wait a minute, that was different when I grew up.
Yeah, just to give a point of reference for people who may not know what you're talking about, there is underneath, I want to say Temple Square, but somewhere in downtown Salt Lake, there is a place where some records are held, but the majority of the records here in Salt Lake are held in granite vaults at the opening of one of the canyons.
Uh-huh.
There's a huge vault where they keep a lot of the genealogical records, but also other things from within the church. And then the other point is the salamander letters that she made reference to is it's actually going to be
a false piece of information.
Yeah, some
about
policy
the church.
What's
that guy's name? The one who
Mark Hoffman was his name, who came forth and said
he forged it and made it, which they were papers that would have made the church look bad.
Yep.
So the church brought them up to, you know, bought them up, like I assume a lot of churches would do, saying, ooh, this is not a good thing, and went and find out later on it was a forgery. So the church was tricked by that, you know what I mean? And I guess you can buy up bad and erroneous information and kind of try to make it go away. I don't know. I think maybe, you know, I'm hoping that Monson gets a revelation, maybe, that transparency might be the best choice. Just like, you know, in 78, who was it who had the great presidential unk to decide that, you know, blacks could have the priesthood?
President Kimball.
It's Campbell?
Yeah.
Because, and believe me, I think that's a wonderful revelation,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure, you know, about a third of your population, especially when you're going to other countries where the predominant people are, you know, are of other races, to you know, missionaries, to be able to say that, you know, oh yes, you can attain the priesthood as well, must be a lot easier for the missionaries. It also, you know, seems like evolution of times, and sometimes I wonder if that's ever going to happen with LGBT, you know, because I just read on the Huffington Post today they were calling, you know, the church, and I noticed this on their website too, that they're calling more for more openness and understanding of LGBT.
Absolutely.
They're trying to sort of, you know, that's a nice way to do it, when in fact we know they had reparative therapy for your homosexuality or, you know, all that kind of stuff in the past. And I'm wondering if that's going to be revelatory as well. I just like we hope with the country, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of people who either have friends or family members within the LGBT community that have fingers crossed going, all right,
Absolutely, we're hoping this changes. Because here's the thing. These gay members want to be in the church. They also want to be honest about their lives and love who they love with the same kind of lovingness that the church has taught about what marriage should be. It's they can't reconcile their biological thing. You know, it's almost like they've said, no, this is a moral falling, you know, failing of yours. when in fact it isn't. And then, like many conservative religions, people are oftentimes shunned, and it's really sad. Or they say, oh, no, 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 we're going to say now that you can be gay, but you can't act on it, which is saying, imagine saying that to a heterosexual couple.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre. In this day and age, maybe, you know what I mean, for some people. But we still have a very, you know, they wouldn't have spent $23 million on Proposition 8 if marriage wasn't still the backbone of their gig.
Well, and
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like you hit it pretty well on the head in my own personal feeling. This is obviously not the feeling of the church, but I feel like if, in fact, there is a more transparent nature about, you know, things going on, the why and the how of things change in a more transparent way, I think that then people can go, okay, you know what? Sure. I get why that would happen, as opposed to sometimes I feel like we just are expected to be like, oh, well, you have faith. And it's like, yeah, I have faith, but I would have liked more information about Prop 8, for example. That's something I've spoken about quite a bit, where it's like, you know, I get it. If the church maybe would have asked me to go and to work for it, thank goodness they didn't. I probably would have because of my dedication to the church. But finding out about what that Prop 8 dealt with 4 months after it had been initiated in California and finding out what the church's effort was and everything like that was really hard for me. And it affected a lot of members of the church going, wait a minute, I thought Jesus said love everyone.
Well, but here's the other thing, too. It happened in another state.
Yeah.
And they were, I think, you know, if it had just been a Mormon initiative, it wouldn't have worked. So they had to kind of get all white wing fundamentalist religion, you know, Christian religions together to kind of make that happen, because the Catholic Church was part of it too,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and probably, you know, Falwell-y kind of people as well. I like how I just made Falwell an adjective. You know what I'm saying? It's. I'm thinking, you know, you have to tithe 10% of your earnings to the church, and you have charity within the church with Deseret Industries, where you can get what?
Look
canned
at
goods
you!
And
look at you!
Oh, I know a lot, baby. And like, you can get your goods and stuff, but yet you work for your goods, so it's a welfare, an internal welfare, and they really do take care of their own in that sense. However, if you needed money, though, why doesn't the money that you tithe in the big church coffers go to the people who need it instead of, oh, I don't know, a mega mall or $23 million to defeat a civil rights initiative.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's like, that $23 million could go far in feeding poor kids around this country that would be Mormon or not Mormon, you know?
Yeah.
So that was a hard thing for me to reconcile personally. I just couldn't wrap my mouth around it. You know what I mean? Like, there are times where it just didn't make rational sense to me, you know, that we would use our charity because people tithe their money, and then they were asked very specifically to donate to this initiative as well,
mm-hmm.
above their fasting money, above other money they're asked for other things, right?
Yeah.
People were asked to give that, and they knew what your financial background was, so they told you how much you could afford to give, which I thought was way personal. I mean, I think sometimes the bishops and the stakes know a lot about people that a lot of religions don't have. That kind of transparency into your own personal life,
mm-hmm.
is amazing to me, that people would kind of sit down and also talk about, you know, their sexual proclivities and you know, now granted, it's under the guise of being deemed temple worthy.
Yeah.
So they have to know all of your financial records, and they have to know about your moral code right now. But, you know, these are things I can't even imagine a rabbi asking me those questions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Behind closed doors without somebody else present. You know, even your doctor can't examine you without a chick around. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
It's interesting, and I see, here's the thing. All religions, as far as religions go, it's pretty young, and it's mm-hmm. wildly growing. You know, it's a hugely growing religion. And yet at the same time, they have growing pains. The good news is they're growing, and the bad news is it can be painful. And I'm wondering how much of this is divinely directed and how much of this is practically directed. Because even in 1978, I don't know where I read this, but somebody said, well, wasn't BYU getting a lot of flack for not from other Big Ten or Pac-10 or whatever these teams are, teams for not having, for not, you know, having black kids or having the priesthood or some sort of, you know, what is it they call it? It's some sort of bias against them, segregation type of gig going on. So that's why other teams said that they wouldn't play against BYU, and then all of a sudden the blacks got the priesthood and they could play again. You know?
Oh, I don't know anything about that. I'll have to look into that for sure. And I'll get back to you on it.
Yeah, the timing was interesting is what I noticed.
And I think for a lot of people, they go, you know, if we were going to do this, why wouldn't we have done it 13 years ago unless it's divinely inspired? Like, that's how I've heard it at least defended on the other side.
It's kind of hard in religion to have to defend it. I mean,
right.
As much as I wasn't going to vote for Romney, not because he was Mormon, but because he was so conservative, I felt bad for him that he constantly had to defend questions about his religion. I mean, everything looks weird on paper.
Right.
You know, gold plates looks weird, and so does the papyrus and blah, blah, blah. But so does walking on water and, you know, getting tablets from a mountain.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I love that.
Worshipping idols,
yeah.
Whatever. Everybody's creepy, you know, in that sense.
Stephen,
what it ends up is what comes up at the end. You know, I would just like to see then the theory becoming the reality of if we all love each other, we all love each other. Then religion works. Or, you know, I don't know. That's just me. And that's not just indigenous to Mormonism. I think that has to do with a lot of other things, you know?
Yeah. Hey,
lot of other religions.
Susan, let's take a break for a minute, and then we'll come back. And I want to know what it is that you love about the Mormon Church. So we'll get back to that in just a minute.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
All right, we were talking a little bit in the break, and we'll get to those, Susan. So hang on to them. Don't let me forget. Don't let me skirt out of those things. But I want to know what you love about Mormonism.
what I love about my Mormonism?
Yeah.
I love me some Mormonism. I do. I think the theory is so gorgeous. I think the focus on the family is so gorgeous. I think, you know, it's almost like the theory of improv, that we all agree with each other and you know, and try to make it all work and work together. There is a can-do spirit. It's not, you know, it's not the beehive isn't there without reason. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when the blank hits the fan, I think Mormons will come together. You know, I think that's an amazing thing. And I hope that there is as judicious and charitable toward other people who are different than their own as they are toward each other. You know, I think everybody feels as though they've been persecuted, and maybe that maybe closes the ranks a little bit. But certainly, you know, being industrious and being able to take care of your own is huge. And the growth has said something. I don't think the growth is coming as an eighth of as much from missionaries as just exploding your own population by making babies. But how cute, family.
Yeah.
Way cute. You know, I wonder, though, when everybody's called to so many jobs in your ward, how much time do you have time for family time? You know what I mean?
It can become a struggle, for sure, especially those serving as, like, bishops and elders, quorum presidents, and relief society presidents. It's, you know, it's a part-time job,
yeah,
if not a full-time.
It can be a full-time job. So it's like they want you to have more kids, but at the same time, they're not giving you a lot of opportunities to take care of them when you're constantly being called. I mean, it's a busy church, but it depends on everybody's ability to participate as well. So I appreciate that. I think a lot of people who are in the church will tell you how loving and close it is and how they feel like their family is really in support of them. And probably the things I've mentioned that seem questionable or questioning are probably not the majority, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that. There's a solid, decent, present, semi-squeaky clean image. I mean, like I said, you turn over a rock, everybody's got something.
Do you remember your first exposure to Mormonism?
Yeah, I had friends who were in choir with me at school.
How old were you?
I was in junior high. And that's when I was aware of steak stuff, like that, you know, you have a huge thing of Heinz ketchup in your basement, you know. restaurant sized, or and all the Mormon girls had Farrah Fawcett hairstyles and used a lot of hairspray and went to a lot of dances. And I must say, though, they were probably the hornier girls in our class, probably because no means yes, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So when one of them kind of stepped out of bounds and, like, slipped out of their house in the middle of the night and started wearing a lot of black eyeliner, it was, you know, it was like Escape from Alcatraz. It was real. They're shown a lot shinier, their changeover, than a lot of the other kids, because the other kids were halfway, you know, over the edge anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of fun watching them rebel. Not too bad. Actually, most of them pretty much stayed true to course.
Did they try and talk to you or about it and say, hey, you should come with us? Or how did you know they were Mormon? What was that exposure like?
Nobody proselytized. I think being a Jew in a very pink and green preppy town made me certainly a lot more compassionate to people who were different, because there weren't a lot of us. And it kind of, we stuck out a little bit, like, ooh, this, I don't look good in pink and green, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that kind of difference, just like somebody who has to go to Hebrew school so they can't be in the brownies anymore. You know, I'm sure when you have to go to Relief Society, that makes you look a little different, or primary or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. They were fully integrated in the school, and certainly the arts. Most of them were very smart and very accomplished in what they did. It was kind of built into the structure.
So how did you come up? You just were like, oh, you're obviously Mormon then.
You know, I don't know. It was as natural as anything. It probably because I had a stake in my town. If I didn't have a stake in my town, I wouldn't have known what the heck that was.
Have you ever been to a Mormon church service before?
No, I've seen them online, and I go, oh, okay, that's what it is. It's no, but I've never been there, and I'm sure that people are called to testimony and say brother and sister a lot.
Yeah.
And everybody.
Well, Sister Messing, of course.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It would never be true for me. I mean, and that's not because Mormons aren't cool. It's just because no organized religion at this point is going to be true for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's amazing to kind of stumble on that by faith. That faith in general fascinates me, in people that go by faith. I think that's great, you know.
Yeah,
I really do.
We were talking in the break a little bit. You had some questions you wanted to talk about still, and things I'm more than willing to talk about and discuss and answer and all that.
Awesome. Well, like, for example, when I was talking about, like, your bishop interviews and how you know, do you find questions about your financial state or and I know a lot of this is to prep you to be okay to go into the temple so you can have your recommend and all good things,
mm-hmm.
but do you find questions regarding your financial state or purity invasive? Do you remember as a kid kind of going, what? Or do
yeah.
you just kind of go, yeah, it's par for the course?
I'll answer the second question first. I remember as a kid in my first bishop's interview when the bishop asked me if I had any sort of difficulty with masturbation. And I was like, what? What is he asking me? Because I remember, you know, having that question asked and had never really known what it was or anything like that. But I want to say when I was being interviewed to be a deacon.
Right? Now you're going, okay.
Oh, no, but I, you know, 12 years old and hadn't ever, you know, experienced that or known even really what it was. And I remember the bishop asking and going, no. But remember going, this maybe is a little uncomfortable for me. Maybe just because at that point in my life, I hadn't even thought about sexuality, really. I mean,
right.
But
now it's right there.
Yeah. Now being married and having, you know, being 32 years old, obviously there's a sexual part of me. And to me, I know that there are a lot of people that have struggles with that. People that go, you know what, that's none of a bishop's business. That's between me and God. And I think that I'm probably a special case in that, you know, if people want to ask me about how much money I make, if people want to ask me about, you know, anything that goes on, within most reason, I would say, hey, here's what this is. This is what I make. This is what goes on. Just because I don't feel personally like it matters if they know that or not. You know what?
I'm an open book, too. And in my life, I am an open book. And I feel like people have nothing to hide, hide nothing. So I feel like that. But at the same time, there are people who do have limits. And I don't think it's anybody's beeswax, including my religious leaders, you know, telling me about what I should be doing with Machocha.
Yeah.
You know? I just don't. Maybe I've always felt that way. Maybe I'm kind of a renegade for religion, you know? I don't know. And you know, things like that, that's kind of led in some places. I think, you know, a lot of things like sexual abuse and molestation has been, in many organizations, kind of kept on the down low because of things like that. Because, well, your bishop can ask you these things, or we don't question our bishop. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's been called by God to be in this position, you know, can't do this, so the kids aren't heard. You know what I mean? Or how could God be wrong then? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I absolutely understand that, and I agree. Like anyone, you know, there's always that saying within the LDS Church, well, he's a bishop, that he couldn't possibly do that. Or the automatic trust of, oh, that person's a bishop or a return missionary, so that must mean he's good to go or she's good to go.
What is that with the missionary stuff, too, in terms of that means they're holier than thou? I mean, you know, kids can get into stuff on their mission.
Absolutely. And so for me,
the youngest adults, and here's the other thing, too. A mission for 2 years, if my church is asking me to proselytize and give up 2 years of my prime youth life, why do I have to raise money for my mission? Hmm. Especially when the church is building a mega mall.
Yeah.
And wondering about that too.
Yeah.
Like if somebody has the sincere and faithful desire to go on a mission, why their church wouldn't pay for it?
There, to my knowledge, just to let you know, I don't know of anyone who's wanted to go on a mission who wasn't able to go. If their family couldn't afford it, that there weren't some means made available for them.
Well, they might be. They've been preparing for that since they were kids. Maybe they've been putting that money aside.
Yeah,
since
maybe.
They were little because
maybe the kids paid for it.
Singing in church, you know, I want to go on my mission, Licky Lock.
Yeah. But I know for by and large, and I would say almost 100% sure that if I were a guy who, you know, converted to the church or, you know, had never really thought about going mission, parents couldn't pay for it, extended family couldn't pay for it, and went to the bishop and said, hey, I'd like to go on a mission, there are funds available for those individuals. But it is hard, and it does cause questioning to go to the second part of what you said with the things like the City Creek Mall here in downtown Salt Lake, that's right across from Temple Square, and you think
is it opened yet?
Yeah, oh yeah, and it's gorgeous.
Man, I bet it is. It costs you know. One of the things that the church is very proud of is that they build that stuff on their own. But this isn't a church. This is a mall.
Well, and to see the phrase "The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints Corporation," sometimes to me, it makes me go, "Oh man, what is this? What do we got here?"
Smart move on their part in terms of tax laws, because if it's a corporation part of a church, they're not being taxed on it.
Right.
So you believe they're making hand over fist on that. I just wonder why, you know, like, I remember people were upset because they thought Mitt Romney hadn't donated enough of his, you know, large income to charity, and people pointed and said, no, he tithes to his church. But if his church isn't necessarily creating always charity and they're creating mega malls, that doesn't, you know, I don't know, it kind of sits a little funk.
Yeah,
you know?
I think a lot of people would say, and I've heard
the Catholics are way into real estate too. Don't please. I'm not.
Oh no, I don't know. I don't feel like you're coming after one or the other. But I think that
it's hard to reconcile sometimes.
Yeah, and what I've heard the most is that, you know, the church invests in these things because they have a huge portfolio of investments as far as different companies and stuff like that. I don't know. There's always that speculation that the church once upon a time owned Coke and then they traded over to Pepsi, or that they own Burger King, or, you know, any of those things.
I think they own a lot of things that they themselves are not allowed to do. like they can't have caffeine.
Yeah, they own all of Las Vegas, actually. No, but
really?
No. But
I need to. Who owns Vegas?
Well, we started it, and then other people took it. Did you know that? Vegas started by Mormons?
No, was it Marriott and those guys? I thought it was the well, then if they started Vegas, then I have to say, then they are in cahoots with gangsters at one point.
Yeah.
Because everybody was, whether they wanted to be or not.
Yeah, no, Vegas way, way, way back in the day was just Mormon settlers on their way to California.
Oh, well, they were on the way.
Yeah.
Did they stay?
But no, some stayed. Some stayed and established it, and there were Mormon churches. I mean, there's a Mormon temple down there now, but that's how it got established, is it was a place between Southern Utah and Southern California for the Mormon saints as they went west. Pretty fascinating stuff.
Is that part of the Trail of Tears?
Different kind of tears.
Tears? Okay, good. I don't know everything. Come on now. If I did, I'd be a Mormon apologist. Yeah. I'm not.
But it is hard for a lot of people, especially with the mall. And I guess just to get out the explanation is a lot of people say, well, you know what? They use the money that they gain from those things, you know, to be able to provide either service or money for organizations or be able to, you know, further the work of the church. That's, you know, and some people can reconcile with that and go, yeah, okay, I get it. And other people go, that's a problem. That's an issue.
Well, I think that's, you know what I think it is? I think it's vague.
Yeah.
Vague. And you know what, though? Here's the thing. It's you know what, one thing that I love, simultaneously love and have a way hard time with it, is there's a real 1950s feel to it, but unfortunately, it's in a 2012 world.
Mm-hmm.
I love a world where women wouldn't have to work. That'd be swell. Guess what? Women work and sometimes even want to work. And at the same time, that's not part of that's not in the, you know, in the works of what people want to happen. You know what I mean? That's mm-hmm. that's not in the pages, you know. And how do they reconcile polygamy? Not the creepy polygamy, you know, like the weird Waco-y kind of, pardon me,
you're
stuff.
Fine.
Or you know what I mean, the weird ones.
Mm-hmm.
The just regular Joe polygamy, where, you know, that's kind of where how it started, and now it's not. You know, and people say, well, the reason most people are not polygamous is because the church was threatened to take away their, you know, their religious status. So
yeah,
they
or
said, oh, I've had revelation that it doesn't work, when, in fact, a lot of people went, screw that, and became polygamous because they thought people were going, you know, to hell with, you know, you're saying that Joseph Smith's and Brigham Young's teachings are invalid if you don't do that. So it's kind of weird, you know, that people like, you know, regular polygamists think that it's actually that regular Mormons, not fundamentalists, are actually going against original church teachings.
Mm-hmm.
How did LDS kind of separate from that and reconcile with that? You know what I mean?
These honestly are the big topics that I think that people have to come to individually a place for it. For the most part, what I know about polygamy is that in order for the state of Utah to become a state, they couldn't do polygamy
right.
anymore. And so
What do regular Mormons on the street think about a show like Sister Wives?
What would I call it? Morbid curiosity, I guess. You know, one of those things where you just love to watch because it's, you know, fascinating to see how these wives interact with it. But because of all the, you know, your words, crazy, Waco-ish stuff, there's a huge separation where people just go, not us. That's not us. That we don't do that. That's not what we do.
Well, it isn't, and they are right to say that because it isn't what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yet at the same time, there is an association, and interestingly enough, the guy who started that was a regular Mormon before he decided to embrace polygamy as lean more to FLDS.
Yeah. So
you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I know a lot of people who just go, boy, you know, I'm hoping to figure that out either later in my life or when I die, and that's hard for a lot of people to be like, wait, so I'm not going to get an answer about this until I die and can ask God about it. But I think for a lot of people, that's how they deal. That's their coping mechanism where they just go, you know what? Is it going to affect whether or not I'm good to people today? No. Is it going to affect, you know, the way I treat my family, the way that I help other people who may need help? No. Well, then, you know, let me focus on those things that matter today and worry about those things from the past later. And some people can't do that, and some people can.
Yeah. That's you know, difficult for the people who really need that kind of hardline facts, or even for the apologists who kind of have supported change of history. Do you think that Monson is a pipeline to God, or do you think that he's just a really solid business guy who was voted by his peers, you know, to kind of ascend, and that he's got a solid line?
I think both, to be truthful with you. I think that there is that he literally is a mouthpiece for God, but that I also think that a lot of those things, you know, that he shares are things that someone who has served the church for a really long time and served people for a really long time almost are things that just kind of come, I don't want to say common sense and downplay the role of a prophet, but you know, I mean, if you're serving people your entire life, to get up and say, hey, you know what, I know that God wants us to treat everyone kindly, is that him saying what God wanted him to say, or is it something that he's just been able to observe that that's the way that life should be?
Well, I have Catholic friends who, you know, who go through the same conundrum with the Pope. You know what I mean? It's not like it's not something new and weird. You know what I mean? That's why I think sometimes when people do say, think that Mormons would be strange, I'm like, no, to me, Scientology is much stranger than that and takes even more of your money.
Hey,
we'll give it free. We just, you know, if you can't afford it, you just can't go in the temple. That's cool. You know what I mean? Yeah, you can still be a Mormon.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Absolutely. And some people, again, another point, a lot of people have a problem with that. So in order to be the most righteous, I have to pay for it?
It's a bizarre thing, isn't it? Question for you, how many times have you been through the temple?
Oh, I've probably been through, I mean, you only go one time through for yourself, and then you do it for other people who have passed on. So
right.
I've probably been.
You also have to do it in order to be at somebody's wedding?
Yeah. So I've probably gone through about 20 to 30 times.
And have you seen, since you were young, and the first time you went through, have you seen a change in the ceremony?
I have not. The changes took place before I went through for the first time.
Like 92 or something like that.
Yeah. I didn't go through until 1999.
Yeah.
So the changes that, you know, that everyone often talks about took place before.
Do some Mormons kind of go, ugh, this is not like the old days, like almost like Catholics get mad that the masses aren't in Latin anymore?
Absolutely.
Like, we used to have blood oath, and that was cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was really neat.
That was the severity, and now we've taken out the severity. And yeah, absolutely. And some people, you know, because the temple ceremony, that portion of the temple ceremony and the Masonic temple ceremony used to be word for word verbatim, and the fact that it's not anymore, some people said, what's going on? I'm out. And all of these things that we've been talking about, the mega church, the temple ceremony, the polygamy, all this stuff, it's a time right now when, because of the immensity of knowledge and information that's available, there's a lot of people who are going, I need to sit down and reevaluate this again.
Well, you know, they might have to sit down and reevaluate it again, and maybe the church can meet them halfway. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it ends up being, you know, I think it was a beautiful divine inspiration. It's sad that it took till 78, but then again in the 60s, people were fighting for civil rights too. So it's not like it was so far out of bounds, you know what I mean? In terms of, like, for example, letting African Americans, you know, come to the priesthood. So you kind of hope in 2012, you know, maybe that they will reconsider LGBT or say, you know what, in the past there were things that were violent and ugly, and maybe that's, you know, maybe we needed a violence in order for the beginning, but that doesn't mean that's who we are right now. How we get there is not always pretty. We're here right now, and what can we do the best good if we do have huge amounts of financial resources in our lucky hands? Can we not give them a way to, oh, I don't know, you know, prevent poverty in the United States? That'd make Mormons heroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For Mormons, or wow, we could adopt a country. You know what I mean?
We'll call it Mormonia.
No joke. Like, you know what I mean? Give me a poor African country, and you'd get a whole country full of Mormons if you fed them all. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The new Darfur. Hey, Mormons are putting a big stamp on that. And guess what? They all got houses, and they're all going to their nice new stakes, and we're going to build a temple. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I mean,
it might work a little better than a rich mega mall in the middle of a very wealthy populace, which is Salt Lake City. You know,
there are some pretty amazing things that the church does. One is called the Perpetual Education Fund, which is on a small level, kind of what you're saying. They'll invest in people in second and third world countries who just want to go to school, who can't do that. And the funds are made available for them to go. And then, you know, they have to maintain a certain standard in school and then are required to pay back a portion of that money that's allotted to them. And then that money then gets passed to another person and to another person. And so, you know, that whole idea of teaching a man to fish as opposed to just giving him a fish,
I agree with that, and I agree with Deseret Industries. I'm wondering, though, how much of that involves a little bit of proselytizing.
Right.
Like, if that is par for the course. But then again, you could go to the Salvation Army, get a bowl of soup, and then you're going to have to listen to a sermon. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? There's always a catch. Do you really get something for free?
Let me ask you this. I got to wrap this up. I got to get going. But what's new for Susan Messing? What do you got going on? Where can people see you? We have people that listen. We call them either converts or lifers that listen to the Cultural Hall, and they live in Chicago.
I love the Cultural Hall. I think it's an awesome podcast. I think you guys are awesome, and I think you guys really raise questions. I think promoting discussion isn't a fantastic thing. I am, every Thursday night, I do a show called Messing with a Friend at the Annoyance Theater, one of the few uncensored comedy spaces in the world. I don't say that lightly.
Yeah, no. Don't think when she says uncensored, it just means like, oh, well, it'll be gentle. I've been there. They're phenomenal shows, but it is an uncensored theater.
Yes, it is. And I also do work with the Second City, and I do a show called The Playboys if Kate Duffy's around, and if she's not, then I do a show with just Rachel Mason called The Boys, and that's every third Sunday of the month. And I still created IO level 2 curriculum, so I teach for them, and I teach for the Annoyance in Second City when I feel like it, and go around the country and teach and perform.
If
somebody's dumb enough to ask me to be in their movie, I'm always smart enough to say yes.
Have you done any of that stuff recently?
I did. I just last year I did a movie called Close Quarters that just won a couple awards at some Midwestern festival-y thingy, so that was nice. But I just kind of, somebody said, you know, do you create your fate or do you just kind of float into it? I'm kind of someone who just sees it in front of me and does it. Oftentimes I'll have initiative for something and then make it happen. But most of the time lately I've been floating into it because I've got a lovely new husband and a beautiful 9-year-old daughter who is healthy and happy. And that's all I can ask for at this time in my life.
What's your favorite part of your faith, Susan?
I would say probably the traditions ? Because Jewish holidays for me represent my family, not just going wiki-waki-waki, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's kind of my ethnicity. I feel sociologically and culturally Jewish. I just don't feel very practicing it. I think there's just many ways to get there. But I would have to say it's family, and I would probably say a lot of Mormons might say the same thing, you know, that it represents their family and that this is some sort of tradition and that, you know, there's a lot of pride for the Mormons when they came from, you know, I was an original, my great-great-great-great was an original apostle, you know what I mean? When you've got the family legacy, you kidding me? That's a nice pedigree. Doesn't suck.
Well, I appreciate you taking some time with us and hope that this podcast nourishes and strengthens your body. And if you're not able to listen this week, that you'll be able to listen next week. And as always, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat.